Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me today is writer-director Michael Hurst, and his new film is an indie sci-fi thriller called Paradox. And as the title tells you, it's time travel messing up a whole lot of people's lives. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So this is an intriguing little thriller because you don't know where the twists are coming from next. And I enjoy that, not being able to figure out what's going to happen 5 minutes before it happens. So thank you for that.
Oh, I appreciate that. That's great. Yeah, thank you.
So you wrote this and directed it. Where did the premise for you writing it come from?
Weird things I can't remember. These lightning strike things, they happen when they happen, and you can't really force it, as you know. The only thing I can say is that I really always wanted to do a time travel movie. I love time travel movies. It's kind of my favorite type of sci-fi, and I'm a huge sci-fi fan in general, but The Terminator is one of my favorite movies of all time. Mm-hmm. And then there's Time Crimes and Primer, the sort of lower end of the spectrum budget wise as well. It's just so clever and so fantastic, and I always love, as Doctor Who guy says, timey-wimey stories. I really enjoy the sort of paradox effect of them, and there's something very intriguing from a filmmaking point of view is that we're used to seeing cause and effect follow each other in life and in every story ever. And it's really interesting to reverse that and see the effect first and then find the cause later. I think that's why people love Memento so much. It's so clever the way they did that. And so that was sort of my inspiration for writing Paradox, was I'd like to see, basically, when this guy travels forward then 1 hour in time to test his machine, he sees the effect of everything that's happened. He sees all the blood and the dead bodies, and they all his friends are dead, and he realizes everyone's been murdered. And then he goes back, and then we watch the causes happen for the rest of the movie. So the thing I really enjoy is that it's a sort of twist of not doing cause and effect in order, as you have to in every other type of movie, you know.
How long did it take you to write it, and how long was it between writing it and beginning of production?
It took about sort of 3 months to write it. I mean, two of those months would be doing the sort of notes and the outline, the beat sheet, the Blake Snyder stuff, and then only about 2 or 3 weeks of actual writing, because it was a very strict outline, very, tight and compact story. So it only took about 2 weeks to write it in final draft. And then I gave it to a guy called Jorge Salariki, who I knew from another thing that I tried to do at Fox, the year before, and he got it financed almost immediately. So there was no downtime at all. It was like 2 months since I finished writing it that we went into pre-production.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really quick. It's really lucky. I mean, it contained, low budget, but nonetheless kind of high concept sci-fi thing is the easiest thing to get made.
Yeah, that kind of quick turnaround is rare.
Yeah, well, I know. I mean, I've literally spent 2 years trying to get everything made up until this point. All my films that I've done up until this point have always taken a year and a half to 2 years to get financed. And this was by far the quickest. This was just really smooth and easy.
Had you always intended to direct it?
Honestly, the truth of it is that when I write these things and other people direct them, I can't watch them. Like, I haven't seen them. It's too upsetting to watch them. So I end up with these DVDs on my shelf, because I do buy the DVDs, on my shelf, and I've never seen them. So when you have, pride of authorship in the screenplay, and you wrote it on spec and you're really excited about it, you kind of have to direct it yourself so you can ever watch it in the future.
Was the directing process, was actually making the movie as much fun and as intriguing as it was when you were writing it?
Yeah, I mean, it was quite good fun. I mean, filmmaking is a bit of fun, it's always really difficult, but I mean, it was a smooth shoot. Yeah, the producers were very, very pleasant people. The guys at Parkside were just really nice people. And that made it easy. And then Zoe Bell was a really lovely person, and that kind of set the tone. I always find the lead actor on a film sets the tone for the rest of the cast, and indeed some of the crew as well. And so she was so pleasant, so easygoing, so professional, so just decent human being. That really helped the whole atmosphere on set. And so it wasn't a contentious, nasty shoot or anything. It was a tight 15-day schedule, so there was a lot to get done every day. But on the whole, it was quite pleasant. Yeah, it was more pleasant than most of my directing experience here.
Well, that's good. Without giving a whole lot away, we can tell our listeners that the movie is about a group of cutting-edge scientists who create a device for time travel, and during their first test of it, people start dying and no one knows why, and the rest of the movie is about figuring out who's trying to kill them, why they're being killed, and, well, since they have a time machine, trying to avoid the killing.
Yes, there's lots of forward in time to try and prevent what's happened, yeah, or what will happen. It's all very strange.
Yes, you have one person going forward in time, one person going backward in time, and just a whole lot of bloodshed is a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of bloodshed, yeah. Yeah, you've got some bloodshed in there. Basically, what I wanted to do was do a sort of sci-fi, high-tech Agatha Christie thing. So it's basically a trap, you know, you're trapped in a sort of, you know, a space with these people. One of you is a killer, the other is just like 10 Indians or whatever. But nonetheless, there's also this time machine in the middle of it all, complicating everything massively, you know.
So it'd be like 10 Little Indians with time travel.
Yeah, that's exactly mine. That would be my pitch to producers if I was making this again.
Now, what was your inspiration for the production design? Because it's very, very Spartan, very claustrophobic in some areas. And I realized that some of that tight shot feel helped enhance the panic that some of the characters are feeling.
Well, yeah, thanks. I mean, the production design sort of thing was unofficially sort of conducted by my wife, because my wife is a sort of set decorator. She worked on Frank Darabont's Mob City. She worked on Kevin Smith's Red State. And so she's a sort of top set decorator. And she obviously sort of godmothered, if that's a word, the production design, art direction of the film. And so she really helped. Once we had the location, which was not, it was a decent location, but it wasn't great looking, it wasn't very sci-fi. She came in and she sort of like oversaw the turning of it into a sci-fi time travel type environment. And her friend Greg came on board as a production designer because she worked with him before and she really trusted him. And Greg also brought a few people on board. But my wife kind of godmothered it. It was all very unofficial because obviously it's all being done very low budget and stuff. But she's my wife, so she had to help me out, you know. And the single biggest thing we did that really has changed my perspective, and no pun intended and all this thing, is that the corridor itself, the corridor was the main set. The corridor was real, you know, the corridor really did connect to all the different rooms in the time travel facility. And it was a big corridor, it wasn't very long. And I needed a long corridor. And so Greg, I think it was Greg, came up with the idea of painting that grey stripe down the on the wall,
mm-hmm.
along the wall. There's a grey stripe along the wall. And that grey stripe changed everything. That grey stripe was the hero of the movie. That grey stripe turned that corridor and made it look three times longer on film than it really was. It was amazing. And if you'd seen that corridor before, when it was grey, dingy, you know, we painted it all white and made it all look a bit more, you know, high-tech looking. But it was the grey stripe down the middle that made all the difference. It was really weird.
Now, your main characters are Zoe Bell and Malik Yoba. And how did they come to the project? Because most of the twists in the story, which I won't give away, involve their characters, and the way that was played surprised me. And I like being surprised when, like I said, when I can't figure out what's going on ahead of time, I enjoy that.
Right, no, that's the whole idea. I can't speak for them, but I think that was probably part of the one to see the movie. Certainly with Zoe Bell, I think that the idea was to try and make her like not Zoe Bell. for the first sort of half an hour of the movie. So she's just a girlfriend. She seems like a really sweet, sort of innocent and sort of defenseless person. And then during the movie, she becomes more and more Zoe Bell, to do a twist that I don't want to give away. But the whole point is that she sort of like grows into her little Zoe Bell-ness during the movie. But in the first part of the movie, she gets to show that she can really act as someone who's not in that classic sort of Zoe Bell mold at all. She can play a really sort of nice, decent, sweet little person. She's able to do both things. And so maybe that was an appeal for her. I mean, I know the Accelerator, the distributor of the film, loved Zoe Bell. They had another Zoe Bell project already. And they sort of, they were like, can you get Zoe Bell? Can you get Zoe Bell? And I'm a huge fan of Zoe Bell from before. So she sort of became the linchpin of the casting as far as the financing goes. And I had to go to Malibu and, try and sweet talk her into doing it. But hopefully, thankfully it worked out. And Malik was obviously riding high from being on Empire. And again, Accelerator were like, can you get Malik Yoda for this? And we were like, yeah, man, we'll try. And luckily for us, it worked out that it was just, it was the end of season one of Empire, so he was available.
Excellent. So I am hoping that all of our listeners go out and check this movie out when it comes out. Are you working on anything new right now?
Oh, yeah, no, I've always got stuff on the stage, as it were. I'm writing a script right now that I'll go out with. I'll try and, hook some of the same producers in Paradox with when I finish it. My working method now is not to, I don't try and solicit interest in things as I'm writing them. I just write them in a sort of the purest way I can. And then once I've written them and I'm happy with them, my brother's sort of my sounding board, because he's also a writer-director himself. Once he gives me the sort of thumbs up on the script, then I'll start sending out to producers that might want to make it. So that's my process, and I'll be doing that hopefully on the next script, in a month or so.
Is it going to be another sci-fi, or are you going to horror or something else?
No, sci-fi again. I guess you might call it sci-fi horror. I guess if you were crossing genres, sci-fi horror is sort of my favorite type of crossing. I'm huge, like I said, Terminator fan, Alien fan. Sci-fi and horror, I think, go very well together. So this next one will be more of a sci-fi horror film, yeah.
Excellent. Well, keep us informed when that next movie's ready to be seen. I'm sure I will have fun with it, because I had, like I said, I had an enjoyable time watching this because I couldn't figure out who was doing what beforehand, and usually I can, so thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's great. That's the whole idea, so thank you very much.
And the movie is Paradox. It is available in theaters on April 15th and video on demand and iTunes on April 19th. Go check it out. It's a tight little movie with a lot of thriller elements and, of course, the headaches that come when you involve time travel and people.
Absolutely. Never a good idea.
All right. Thank you for your time today, Michael.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
You're home from the comic book store with your favorite titles. Wouldn't they read better while listening to Krypton Radio?
Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now is actor Malik Yoba, who is playing the lead in the new indie sci-fi time travel thriller, Paradox. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, most of our fans will know you from Sci-Fi Channel's Alphas, But how do you view science fiction and fantasy as an act?
Are you a fan? I'm not a super fan. Like, I'm not one of those people. I have a sister that lives for it, you know. Actually, no, that's not true. As a kid, I loved me some Martian Chronicles and Doom and things like that. Like, we had a teacher in elementary school that really tried to get us thinking about things, you know, through science fiction books. So I am a fan. I was a fan of Star Trek and Close Encounters and Logan's Run and all these films as a kid that sort of take you places. Like, wow, wouldn't that be cool if one day we can do that, you know? So, I'm not one of those people that, like, says I have to do sci-fi. But I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed the Alphas. I've enjoyed Defying Gravity. I enjoyed doing this film. I would definitely love to do more.
Mm-hmm. Well, your performance in this film I found rather intriguing, because in this movie you are the man. You're the man with the money, the power, the scientific know-how, who's trying to build a time travel device. And It just the way you are being the string puller, and I'm not going to give any spoilers away for our listeners, but there's a twist when you find out he's looking for something else too. And when the several twists happen, I was surprised, and that made me happy, because usually time travel movies don't surprise me anymore. So this one did, and your performance was part of that. So thank you.
Oh, well, that's great then, right? So, I love that. So you were surprised.
I was very surprised. So that leads to some of my questions. What inspired you, or what captivated you from this script?
It was the script itself. I thought it was clever. I thought that Michael did a great job scaring me when I read the script. I was like, wow, this is pretty clever. And I just liked where he went with it. I said it would be great to play this role. And also, my favorite word is offer. So when you see an email in your inbox that says you have an offer, you've been offered the role of blah, blah, blah. That always makes you feel good as an actor. Because we audition in my career. I've probably auditioned for thousands of roles I've never gotten. You know, and that's real. So offers are always nice.
Well, I, for one, am glad you got this. And I've spoke to writer-director Michael Hurst earlier, and he was ecstatic when you said yes.
Well, that's good to know. He never told me that. No, I'm just kidding. No, he was great. He was great to work with. It was a great little month I spent with him. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it a lot, for sure.
Now, to give our listeners a little bit of a breakdown, this movie is about a group of young scientists working on a secret project that may allow them to travel in time. But when their first test subject returns from going ahead 1 hour, he's in a complete panic, begging everyone to shut the project down or everyone will be dead. And that thriller... Mm-hmm. Yeah, that thriller aspect really intrigued me, and as far as I'm concerned, it delivered.
Well, good. I'm glad. I think it's a good little movie. It's a small independent film, but it's definitely a good time.
Now, you're...
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I did. How did you work with the... I'm gonna go with claustrophobic sets.
Yes, that's good. That's a good
pretty good description of what we were dealing with, for sure.
Because there really isn't a lot of space in there, but you guys made the facility seem larger than it was, but the tightness of it made
movie
it...
Movie magic, baby. Movie magic. Well, it's one of those things, you know, you do these independent films, you know, you have a big idea, but not a whole lot of money. And you know that, you know, you have to make it work. And it's, you know, one of the things I enjoy, what if the large budget or small budget? I like the collaborative nature of filmmaking. And so as long as, you know, people treat you kindly and, you know, and treat you like a teammate, then, you know, it's easy to sort of like say, okay, we're gonna get in the trenches together and make this film. So give yourself over to that. It wasn't too cramped. It wasn't that tiny. It's a studio downtown LA. And so it wasn't too bad from a space perspective. And they treated us nicely. So there you have it.
That's good. Now, could you ever see yourself directing or writing a science fiction or horror movie?
I don't know about horror, because as much as I'm an actor, you know, as a kid, I was terrified of films like Carrie or The Omen. You know, I didn't want to go see them. And the thing that allowed me to finally, like, see scary or horror films was being an actor. Because I realized, oh, they're just acting. But as a kid, I was terrified. So I don't know if, like, I could never imagine doing a film like, you know, Saw as a director. But I could see myself doing, you know, any of the stuff. Like, I actually had Alpha had another season. I was an able to direct on that show.
Awesome.
They were cut. They needed to direct.
Yeah.
But, yeah. If it's intriguing, yeah, definitely, I would do it.
Yeah, I thought... I
need all the blood and gore and murder and all that stuff.
Right. No, I'm one of the fans that thought Alphas was canceled too soon, so...
Yeah, we all do. We felt that could have gone for a while. That was a good time, but unfortunately, that's television for you, you know?
Yeah, well... I wish you luck with Paradox and any of your future projects. If they're sci-fi related, definitely let us know.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with a little bit more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Hey, you. Stop hiding behind that sofa. Come out from back there. Your sofa wants to talk to you, wants to play footsie with your mind. Listen to it. Relax. Let it in. Starship Sofa, the first podcast ever to win a Hugo Award, with weekly stories from the world's best authors, Michael Moorcock, Peter Watts, Joe Haldeman, Peter F. Hamilton, and many, many, many more, with news and reviews and interviews. Bradbury, Pole, Wolfe, and Mieville, the sofas chewed the fat with them all. Facts and fictions, articles and particles. Oh, why aren't you listening? StarshipSofa.com. Your best science fictional fix this side of the coffee table.
So, indie movies, sci-fi thrillers. I think we need a wider selection or a wider distribution for some of these. Just because every now and then you find one that's really, really good, like Parallels and Time Lapse. And then you find ones that are pretty good, which is where I put Paradox. The one regret I have about interviewing director Michael Hurst is not realizing beforehand that he wrote a B-movie classic, Mansquito, I did not know that before I did the interview with him. Otherwise, I might have asked him about Mankiewicz. So yeah, I need to do my homework a little better for everyone. That's just goes without saying. But I really enjoyed talking with Michael Hirst and Malik Yoba. I wish the connections had been a little bit better on both of them, but sometimes you get a bad connection. There's nothing you can do about it to fix it. Oh, well. But we have a lot of, you know, we're starting to get into that summer blockbuster movie territory. So we have Captain America Civil War coming up. We have X-Men Apocalypse coming up. We have, well, Doctor Strange isn't until towards the end of the summer. We have Suicide Squad. I know I'm missing a couple. And now, for just personal curiosity reasons, I'm actually interested in seeing the Magnificent Seven remake. That movie, the original Magnificent Seven, 1960, starring Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, Charles Bronson, James Coburn, Robert Vaughn, directed by John Sturges. It's a classic Western. And yes, it's a remake of Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai. But you know what? It's a damn fine film. I mean, they tell similar stories. You've got the Old West, the cowboys, who are such a classic archetype. The Old West itself is a mythological period in American history. And then with Seven Samurai, you've got the feudal system, the wandering samurai, the Ronin, and that period in time is a mythological period in time in Japanese history. So the parallels are easy to make. And hearing that Magnificent Seven was going to be remade, my first thought, I was going to be ill. I honestly thought I was going to be ill. I said, no, they can't remake that one, not that one, anything but that one. But the first trailer for that has come out, and I've said it before, and I will say it again, I am a sucker for a Western. I really am. I wasn't going to stay away forever. I couldn't. It's a Western. I hadn't even realized who was cast in this movie. I had no idea Denzel was playing the part of Chris. That struck me as interesting. I didn't know that Chris Pratt was on board to play the role of Vin, Steve McQueen's role. That got me even more curious. And, well, I'm willing to give this movie a chance. 99% of the reason being Denzel Washington, plain and simple, period, end of story. I don't think I've ever seen him in a truly horrible movie. I'm sure someone out there will let me know if I'm wrong. They might have seen him in a movie they thought was horrible, and I would like your feedback. So yeah, those are my movie observations for the day, short and sweet, mostly because we have a lot of TV talk coming up in the next few weeks, a lot of Sci-Fi Channel stuff, Hunters coming up, hopefully more 12 Monkeys, got a Stitcher's chat coming up. This is a great time to be a sci-fi fan, isn't it? I think so. But that will do it for this episode of Slice of Sci-Fi. If you have questions or comments, feel free to call and leave us a voicemail message. That number is 602-635-6976. Head on over to iTunes, leave us a review. Let people know if we are entertaining you. Are you not entertained? I hope so. Talk to us on Twitter, @SliceOfSciFi. Check us out on Google+. plus Slice of Sci-Fi. And also come to the website, sliceofscifi.com, sliceofscifitv.com. Wait, no, that's sliceofscifi.tv. Yes, there's a video podcast over there. WritersAfterDark.com, KickAssMysticNinjas.com, and ItsComicBookDay.com. I just found out that nominations for the Parsec Awards are open. If anyone out there has enjoyed what Slice of Sci-Fi has brought you the past year, head on over to ParsecAwards.com and submit a nomination for us. I think it would be kind of cool to get a nomination again after so many years. That'd be almost better than feedback. Almost. Not quite. Almost. Thank everyone for your donations and your pledges of support through Patreon. If you want to help support the hosting, the website hosting, and the media hosting, all of which cost money every month, please head on over to patreon.com/sliceofscifi and pledge your support. Any amount will help. And for the larger patrons, I am still working on perks for you guys. Might be a couple of video perks coming along later. Stuff is in the works. As always, my eternal gratitude goes out to the geek rock band Sci-Fried for their musical contributions for our brand new theme. Sci-FriedBand.com is where you can find them if you like their flavor of geek rock, and tell them I sent you. Say, hey, Summer loves you guys. We decided to check you out. But that will do it for this episode. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.